This is chapter 32, and this is Jacob sending a message to Esau. So we finished out chapter 31 with Jacob and Laban kind of coming together with a peace covenant together as God is their witness. And Jacob's now continuing on his journey that God instructed him to do back to his hometown, homeland. So Genesis chapter 32, verse 1. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. So the same messengers of God we've seen interacting with Jacob before, where he set the pillar, that monument of God, same angels. Verse 2. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host," and he called the name of the place Mahanaim. And Mahanaim in Hebrew, meaning two camps or two hosts, once again representing those angels of God, the extensions of God. And he's naming that place after them. They were there. God was with him. Verse 3. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. So Esau's land, the country of Edom, where we get his descendants, the Edomites, Jacob sent his messengers there. And that phrase, when you translate it back to the Hebrew, was a past tense phrase. So most likely he's traveling and was able to see Esau and his people, his camps. So out of fear, we know why he left. One of the reasons he left his homeland was because Esau had strife against him for inheriting his birthright. So Jacob sent his messengers to speak with Esau and let him know that him and Jacob and his people were here. Verse 4. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau." So Jacob's telling his messengers what to say. "Thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now." So sending those messengers back to Esau, he's telling them, look, let Esau know that I was with Laban, our uncle, and I've been with him the past 20 plus years. Verse 5, he's just trying to bring Esau back up to speed of where he was at. Verse 5, "And I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in thy sight." So he's telling his messengers to inform Esau of all these assets he has, kind of intentions to kind of show Esau, like, hey, I'm pretty wealthy now, I can share some of those with you, basically kind of inferencing that Esau's loss of wealth from Jacob inheriting his birthright, there's probably still some strife, even though it was 20 plus years ago when that took place. Verse 6. "And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him." So Jacob's messengers informed Esau, Esau has 400 of his men coming to speak face to face with Jacob. And Esau having 400 men, that's not just a camp or a convoy. 400 men's a lot of men. And when we see, we don't have to go there, but we'll see in 1 Samuel that in David's story, the armies were referenced in increments of 400 men. And then later on in Judges chapter 20, there's a intertribal warfare taking place around 400,000 men. So all along throughout the Old Testament, we're going to see militias and militaries and things being referenced as 400 and increments of 400. So Jacob kind of knows that during this time, 400 was kind of like a rule of thumb for military. So we're going to see here in verse 7 that he's picking up on that, Jacob is. So verse 7. "Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks, and herds, and the camels into two bands." So Jacob, understanding in this time period, 400 was like a rule of thumb for militia, that he's starting to have fear over him and his people that Esau's coming toward him with so many men. So he divides his camp into two separate groups. Verse 8. And said, "If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape." So Jacob showing his leadership skills here. He inherited from Abraham down to Isaac. We know both of them were great leaders, that he's trying to use his strategy and common sense to kind of help his people better escape Esau's army. Verse 9, and Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which sayest unto me, Return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast shewed unto thy servant, for with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Verse 11, Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. So Jacob, using his common sense, he's trying to use his strategy to help better his people, but he knows that this is out of his control. So what's the first thing he does? He prays to God. God of Abraham, God of Isaac, the God that he has a covenant with, the Most High God. He's praying. Notice he's praying for not Esau to fall, Esau to fail, but for him and his people to be delivered away from Esau. So he's leaving it pretty open to, God, I don't want my plan to take place. I want your plan to take place. You know, deliver me from my brother. We don't want any strife. So Jacob's just giving us a good example there to how to pray during situations like that. Don't pray for your or my will to be done. Pray for God's will to be done. Verse 12. And thou sayest, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So Jacob's reminding God, kind of, we're going to see he's kind of checking God here. Of, remember that covenant you promised me? If Esau takes me and my people out, my seed will not be numbered as the sands of the sea. And don't ever put God into check. We're going to see what takes place here. Verse 13. And he lodged there that same night, and took of that which came to his hand, a present for Esau his brother. So Jacob spoke with God, prayed for his protection, but also they settled there for the night, and was him and his people were gathering up a peace offering to kind of give to Esau to help ease the mood. Verse 14. This is what that peace offering was made up of. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, and 10 foals. So this is a pretty big peace offering, enough for well over 400 men. So Jacob was very wealthy, had a lot of assets. He's trying to really bring peace to Esau. Verse 16, And he delivered them unto the hand of his servants, those same messengers, drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, Pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. So that word drove there is eder or flock or herd. So he's saying, let's keep them separate in their own flocks, their own herds, and let's just send them one after another after another. So Jacob showing his common sense and leadership strategy here. So instead of, hey, here's a peace offering, it's, hey, Esau, here's a peace offering, here's a peace offering, here's a peace offering. He's trying to kind of overwhelm Esau with that generosity. So he prayed to God, you know, he's helping his people, but he's keeps pushing and pushing and trying to take over the situation in his own hands. He's not letting God's divine intervention take place. Verse 17, And he commanded the foremost, saying, When Esau my brother meeteth thee, and asketh thee, saying, Whose art thou, and whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee? Verse 18, Then thou shalt say, Thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. Verse 19. And so commanded he the second and the third, and all that followed the drove, saying, On this manner shall ye speak unto Esau when ye find him. So Jacob telling these messengers, make sure Esau knows this is from us. This is from me, Jacob, and us, my people. Make sure he knows this is a peace offering. Verse 20. And say ye moreover, Behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face. Peradventure he will accept me. So I will appease him. That phrase there, when you translate it back to the Hebrew, translates to kafar, which is used to describe kind of an atonement or a covering of a sin. So when I read this, it's kind of once again showing that Jacob's trying to take this situation in his own hands. He's let me use my offering as a covering of what happened. He's not really letting God's divine intervention take place. He's not letting God work in his life. Remember, he's on the path that God set forward for him. So he's kind of, well, we'll see what takes place. Verse 21. So went the present before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. Verse 22. And he rose up that night and took his two wives, his two women servants, and his 11 sons, passed over the ford Jabbok. So the ford means passage or crossing place, and Jabbok or Jabbok meaning pouring forth, but it means pouring forth, but it was also a river east of the Jordan River. So, because when I read that, I was like, what is ford Jabbok? They're just passing over or crossing over that river. And so Jacob's taking his immediate family and crossing them over the river. What are they doing? They're getting off of that path that God sent forth for them to go. Go back to your homeland. Well, now they're getting deterred from fear of sin, fear of flesh. So when you read that, you can read it as passing over the crossing place of the pouring forth river. So it's obviously a big river, so they're getting way off course, trying to take this situation in their own hands. Verse 23. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. So Jacob sent his immediate family and their belongings over the river, but he didn't go. He stayed there. Verse 24. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. So who was this man? He stayed there alone, sent his family off, but now he's wrestling with a man that appeared. Let's see what takes place. Verse 25. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. Verse 26. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, this is Jacob, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. So this man is telling Jacob, look, we've wrestled all night. It's daybreak. Let me go. Jacob's saying, not until you bless me. Who gives blessings? God, right? Let's take it further. Verse 27. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. Verse 28. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. So Jacob, meaning supplanter or heel grabber, his name is now getting changed to Israel, meaning he who strives with God. Well, we've seen it with Abraham. We've seen it with Sarah. We're going to see it over and over again. Who changes these people's names after they have these changes of life, these tests of life? God. He changed Abram to Abraham, Sarai to Sarah. So that's what we're seeing here. This man is blessing Jacob. God gives blessings. This was an angel of God or an extension of God. And we're going to look at different references here in just a second. But Jacob's name getting changed to Israel. He sent his 11 sons over the ford Jabbok, right? Or over the Jabbok River. We're going to see that the 12 tribes of Israel, that's who they were. 12 tribes of Jacob. Jacob was changed to Israel. So his descendants is where we get those 12 tribes of Israel. Verse 29. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. The man is telling Jacob, my name's not important. You got your blessing. It was an extension of God. Verse 30. And Jacob called the name of the place Penuel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. So Penuel is what he named the area they battled, literally meaning face of God, showing that Jacob wrestled with this extension of God, this angel of God, however you want to put it. And you don't have to go there. I'll pull it up on the screen here, but we're going to read in Hosea chapter 12, verses 3 and 4. This is Hosea speaking on behalf of God to the later Israelites and giving them kind of a calling to repentance and giving them an example from Jacob, which they were descended from. So this is Hosea speaking. Hosea chapter 12, verse 3, "He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and by his strength he had power with God." So who's Hosea telling them about? Jacob, surplanter, heel grabber. We know him and Esau, their story. Verse 4 in Hosea, "Yea, he had power over the angel and prevailed." Well, we just read here it was a man. No, it was an angel. It was God face to face. It was God, an extension of God in the flesh. "He wept and made supplication unto him. He found him in Bethel." Where is Bethel? That's the place where Jacob built the monument because God was with him. "And there he spake with us." So once again, just showing that this man that Jacob was wrestling with was an extension of God. God, he was almost keeping, trying to put God in check of, remember our covenant? Well, God put him in check. Listen, follow me. I'm about to put you to a test. And they wrestled all night long. So back to Genesis 32, verse 31. "And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh." So his thigh was messed up. They wrestled all night. But this is just showing his strength under God. He persevered through it. God gave him a test, a physical and mental test, and he was persevering through it. He has power with God. Verse 32. "Therefore, the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank." So, a lot of people read this as his hip, or something along those lines, but basically this was, a lot of people represent this as the sciatic nerve, the tendon that runs down the thigh. And Jewish tradition still kind of refrained from this, but eating of that part of the animal, or, you know, because it's used as a representation, basically, of what Jacob went through. So it's almost like, to some religions, a holy thing. Don't eat it. It's a representation. But there's no real sin of eating of thigh meat or whatever, but like I said, a lot of religions and stuff stray away from it, but all it is here is representing what Jacob went through with God. So we see Jacob, he's kind of straying off God's path, kind of getting away from what God has him to do out of fear of man, right? Well, how can we apply that to our lives? What does Jacob go through? God puts him in check. He wrestles with an